Welcome, welcome to What'd You Think? The Drive Home After the Show. Yet again, we have another super size, super special. And Bobby and I are here, as always. And this time we're talking about Spider-Man 2. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
Oh, and, I thought it was Neighbors.
Yeah, well, tough.
I've seen that, too.
Shut up.
And with us are the lovely dual hosts of Hey Kids Comics, the mighty Andrew Farmer.
Hey, guys.
And the
hey.
The brick house that is
Hello.
Cole Houston.
Indeed.
Wow.
So fellas, I guess we'll go ahead and hit the ground running. As always, this episode is filled with spoilers. If you haven't seen the movie yet, see it before you listen to it, because we are not holding back anything. We're going to talk about everything, whether what we loved and what we didn't love. And we're going to start with what we were hoping and expecting to see from the trailers and how it compared to what we actually saw. And I am going to let company go first. So, Andrew, you want to get us started?
You know, I went in with pretty much no expectation. As awful as that might be to say, I didn't really catch a lot of the trailers for it. You know, I saw some of the short, like 30 seconds of video of footage from the movie type things, but I didn't see much of the trailers. And Spider-Man, I'm kind of, you know, on the fence about whether I really like the character or not. Mm-hmm. I'm always 49 or 51% on that. But so compared to what I was going into, which was pretty much no expectation, it did a really good job of impressing me.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed it.
That is like the most backhanded compliment.
Yeah, it is a long way to go to maybe suggest that there's the possibility that you could possibly.
No, I never had any attention. It's like I've never been in an intention to slap that guy, but I walked right in and you know what? I slapped the crap out of him.
I took one look at him. And
that's awesome.
Well, Bobby, what did you think?
You know what? I actually really enjoyed the last one. I know not everybody did, but I like Spider-Man, but I'm not a hardcore Spider-Man fan, so I don't care when they mix things up or change anything, you know. So going into this one, I ended up really enjoying it a lot more than the previous one, and I just thought it was an overall better film of all the Spider-Man movies they've made so far.
Mm-hmm.
That was just,
like, yeah.
You know, that was just my overall opinion, and I thought they made some really brave choices that, you know, we all knew would come, but not necessarily this early, you know, and the fact that, you know, most studios will frown on doing all that stuff that I'm sure we'll get into the discussion, but visually I just thought it felt like a comic book movie to me and a Spider-Man movie more so than any of them before this.
Cool. What'd you think, Cole?
Well, you know, going back to the trailer thing, that I didn't really, you know, I saw some of the trailers, some of the commercials mainly, and then a trailer or two, and of course, you know, you can't help but stumble on stuff in the fanboy press or crap people post on eBay that's, you know, oh, look, here's a picture of somebody going through Norman Osborn's basement, and look, oh, there's Doc Ock and Vulture paraphernalia, and it's like, okay, I would have liked to have run into that myself, but there you go.
Right.
But that was definitely an issue I had, but we'll get into that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But the thing about it is, you know, when you get right down to it, it's almost impossible to completely insulate yourself from that without insulating yourself from everything.
Right.
Literally, from just like going away, not watching TV, not going to the movies, or like showing up 45 minutes late for the start time of a movie, so you're coming in at the last trailer, which is usually some crap romantic comedy no one's going to see.
Yeah. except my wife.
And Bobby, because he has to go see it, everything.
Yeah.
Right.
But the thing about it is, we had not seen the first Amazing Spider-Man.
Right. Right.
So, in anticipation of the fact that we really wanted to do this show, we're like, okay, let's get this over with. But, I mean, at the same time, I'd heard that it was better than I was expecting it to be.
Right. Right. Exactly. adding with what Cole said, we really wanted to do this episode with Hey Kids Comics, and so it's like, hey, if you're gonna go see Spider-Man 2, and it's like, sure,
The funny part of this conversation that I have to interject. Since Cole brought up the fact, I wasn't going to bring up that y'all hadn't originally seen the other one yet. I was going to leave it alone and say
that
you
was
know,
gracious of you, but I'm bound to just give it up.
So I have to point out the funny conversation between me and Catherine before this.
Oh yeah,
we're discussing seeing the new film and talking about it.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, I was really bored and I didn't really like that one. And then I realized throughout the conversation as it goes on, we're not even talking about the same Spider-Man movie. Because I'm talking about Amazing Spider-Man, she's talking about Sam Raimi's original Spider-Man, and she's talking about...
She's talking about the last one.
And I'm like, wait a minute, I don't think we're talking about the same movie. She goes, oh. And then Cole comes back, pops in, and he's like, she hasn't seen that one. I'm like, what is happening with this conversation?
Well, yeah, that
was pretty good.
We Redboxed the thing.
I got Mary Jane just got on my last nerve, and you know I was just disappointed that she didn't die.
You've clearly never read a Spider-Man comic.
I didn't know if I could take much more of that,
it did almost border on Smallville by the time you got to the third Sam Raimi.
Hey, I like Smallville.
No, I was in the same boat as I think probably everybody was, where I was so the Sam Raimi movies left such a bad taste in my mouth that when they rebooted with The Amazing Spider-Man, I was like, yeah, all right. I didn't see it in the theater. I was like, I'm not going to bother with that. And then it came out on DVD, and I'm like, well, all right, I'll give it a shot because I'm bored and it is a superhero movie, and the worst superhero movie can at least make me excited about, you know, it being a superhero movie.
Pushes you into the superhero summer we had going on.
Andy is in a role of backhanded compliments today.
I am with these movies, but no, honestly,
as a fan, you're obliged.
Honestly, I was really pleasantly surprised with the original Amazing Spider-Man movie. Like, I thought it was really, really well done. They actually portrayed Spider-Man the way that Spider-Man was supposed to be portrayed. He was a little younger and way more of a smartass. So they did that very well. So I think part of the reason that I went into Spider-Man 2 with this no expectation thing was I was like, I really hope they don't screw up what they started in Amazing Spider-Man. And I talked to Bobby, and Bobby's like, well, did you like the Amazing Spider-Man? And I'm like, yeah, I did. Actually, I thought I really enjoyed it. He's like, well, then you're going to be fine.
Yeah, because the thing about it was that, you know, we had not seen it. So we go and I red box, you'll get the red box, and we put it in, and we're starting to watch, and Kathy's like, no, we've seen this before. She goes, I remember this. We've seen this before. And I think, no, I assure you we haven't. She goes, no, we've seen it before. And I think we were like over at Rick's one time, and it was playing in the background. We saw, you know, just this one scene. So that would be natural, but then you know, all of a sudden things start happening, and she's like, "We haven't seen this before." I'm like, I told you.
I don't know what we're watching. What are we watching?
Y'all happen to catch clips of the film at Rick's the one time something Muppets isn't playing,
or the you know the one time, yeah, any number of other things aren't playing, Muppets or Congress or.
Well, I really liked the new version of Spider-Man a lot sassier, a lot more athletic, not such a milquetoast kind of, you know, you can have an alter ego, but your alter ego doesn't have to be just a whiny butt.
Well, the thing with the Spider-Man comic is it was one of the few superhero comics that's about, this is about Peter Parker's life, who just happens to be Spider-Man,
right?
As opposed to being Spider-Man and his, you know, like Batman.
Occasionally, he gets to be.
You know, where Batman is all about Batman, and he's occasionally Bruce Wayne.
You know,
and what I love—that's what I loved about these movies—is it focused on Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy, and they had, you know, and Garfield and Emma Stone have such great chemistry. We all know they're dating, or I knew they were dating in real life, but they have such great.
Of course, you read the trades.
Oh yeah, because you see me at the hair salon with them. But they have such great chemistry on screen. Like, it's still entertaining to watch them back and forth when there's no superhero stuff going on.
Right.
Right. Well, let's go into what we like the most about the movie. Bobby, you want
I do want to point out, though, that, you know, because we had not seen that before, you bring up a good point, because Spider-Man, it's a tough character to do because he is such a milquetoast in the comics.
Right.
And, there's that desire to kind of maintain and preserve that idea, but at the same time, you know, it gets a little over the top when he's like, I'm Peter Parker, and then one day he comes and like shoves somebody's head through the lockers. You have to at least give him some kind of potential. You know, he's a little quiet, he's a little in the background, he's like Superman or like Clark Kent, his manners are on the mild side, but at the end of the day, he's at least, it's not too terribly shocking. It almost becomes more like some kind of Kenny Rogers song where the kid has enough and beats the shit out of everybody.
Not Planet Texas, though. Kenny Rogers, early gambler Kenny Rogers.
At least the new Peter Parker had at least a bit of a reputation for being athletic. I mean, if you're a nerdy, scared to trip over a step kind of kid, and all of a sudden you can climb walls, does that mean you're going to climb walls? No, because it's high and it's scary whether you can climb it or not. But they've developed this character to where that's something that he has the kind of personality that he would actually try it out. That's how I was reading him.
You've still never read a Spider-Man comic, have you?
No. And
I'm not at all ashamed of that.
That's right. But it doesn't matter. I'm at peace with that.
No, I agree with you. I like that there was a lot of subtle things in the original one, and even with the new one, with the way they introduced the other characters. You know, like, one of the things I like the fact about, even though Flash isn't a prominent character of tormenting him in the first one, you get just enough of it, but you get that punch in the face when she tells him, even Flash came to my dad's funeral and you didn't show up.
Yeah, that's right. True. You know, Flash is a douche nozzle of the First Order.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So that whole character thing, even though if you're like, man, they didn't dibble on that, you realize that, okay, you saw he's a douche, and now you're the bigger douche now because you didn't do something he did.
Yeah, this is the guy that's, like, shaking down the wussy kid.
Right. And then in the new movie, they kind of shift it over, and they let them keep building on, now they're a person. Adults as opposed to kids, and dealing with their relationship, but still more on a serious level, and it bounces back and forth, are we together, are we not together, but it's her saying, I'm getting tired of your crap.
Yeah,
that was cool. That was good.
Well, I liked that a lot.
Because that could so easily have turned into, again, we're going back to Smallville,
MC,
or whatever. It could have just turned into the teen angst drama crap, and it was very well played, actually.
In fact, when she said, my dad told you that, I'm like, thank God I do not spend the next hour and a half dancing around that.
Right. Well, and I like that they touch base on it, because, like, as him, I like that they, because, Peter Parker character's always been kind of the goody two shoes, so he sticks by his word and he's a good guy, and he's playing up that guilt ridden thing because he's fighting, literally fighting to be with the woman he loves, but fighting the promise that he made, and even though he keeps wanting to go against it, he feels bad for doing it, and she's like, freaking get over yourself,
I know what I've got into.
And that, and the fact that she's like, he's dead, and I'm like, that's her dad, and she's telling you, dude, my dad's dead, get over it,
It's like she took a very Road Warrior approach. It's like, whatever promise you made died with him.
Well, yeah.
Because she's the one who knows how many boyfriends her dad has scared off. That would be probably 100%.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, most of them weren't superheroes.
Yeah.
Of any order. He just came and says, do me a favor. Don't ever talk to my daughter ever again.
In his dying
breath.
Hi,
son. Welcome to the family. How badly I could disappear you into the New York City Police Department.
But I like that they were using, because it's not just what he said, it's the fact that he died saying it.
Yeah.
And so they keep having him almost haunted by him being there watching him.
Yeah.
You know, but they didn't overdo it to the point where you just start rolling your eyes like, oh my god, get over it. Because they used Gwen to tell him to get the hell over himself.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it all then, I mean, I could have watched that in the new one. I could have watched all the Gwen Peter stuff. They could have never, I mean, obviously we want the Spider-Man side of it, because you could have had no Spider-Man stuff and it still would have been a compelling film about these characters.
Well, she also came off as a cop's daughter.
Right.
I mean, yeah. That's why she was there, and why she was doing this stuff is because she's a cop's daughter. That's why.
They're like 5 degrees less wild than preacher's daughters.
There you go.
I know, I have one.
Wow. Andy, what was your favorite part?
They killed Gwen Stacy.
Okay. All right.
That happened?
Yeah, that happened. And I could not have been happier that they did that.
I agree with you, but I want to hear your reason first.
Because it would have been very easy to not kill her.
Right.
It would have been very easy to break canon, to not use that
to tease it, and then last second, got your nose, we saved her.
Yeah, she grabs the... And I love the fact that it isn't that... It wasn't that that Green Goblin necessarily killed her. It was that he did it because he couldn't get there in time, and then he has to deal with that guilt. It could have been very easy to use that to not use that to develop the character, to let her live, him save her, and she survives and becomes, you know, his girl or whatever, and they break up, and she goes off. Oxford or wherever she's going to go and have not used that, and I could not be happier that they actually made it as dark as they did there, because they could have not done that. They could have
My only issue with the way they handled that was, like, as comic fans, we know that, you know, Spider-Man's the one that actually killed her trying to save her.
Yeah.
Right.
In the movie, while I love the visuals and the way they did it, it doesn't come off as obvious, at least it didn't to me, that she, because they let her hit the ground basically, you know, they kind of, how she kind of barely bounced.
She almost touched, but I think though that
if she cracked her head, that was the thing.
Yeah.
Well, what I got out of it is her head bounced and her neck snapped and she hit her head. And
yeah, but the thing that they didn't do, that would be so tempting to most directors, is to get that kind of satisfying crunch you get when, like, Darth Vader is choking the
right.
You know, like when in Star Wars, where Darth Vader's choking that guy, and you get that like crunchy.
See, it wasn't so much that,
and you didn't get that, and you didn't get, like I was telling Catherine after the movie, if Zack Snyder had directed this, well, you know, any number of things would have been a cluster, but that you would have had. The makeup department would have had to fabricate this thing where it was just painfully obvious that her vertebrae were completely disconnected from her skull.
See, and
you know,
I,
they
I,
would have had massive bruising and trauma and like, you know, protruding bone looking stuff going on.
Well,
because they would want to sex that up too much.
That's the movie I'd want to see. I want to see
Bobby, what are you saying, Bobby?
My issue wasn't like I loved it. Don't get me wrong. It didn't take away from the film. I just wish it would have been more, I guess, more clear, obvious that he's the reason that she died, because it is. But I've talked to a few people that didn't realize that's what happened. They thought she hit the ground and he caught her right as she hit the ground and she bounced. So a lot of them didn't grasp the whole inner turmoil issue of the fact that. He actually killed her, not the fall killing her.
Explain it to me then, because she was falling, he's trying to catch her, and he simply fails to catch her in time.
Right, yeah, but she kind of bounces, like, and I believe in the original comic, doesn't he break her neck trying to catch her?
Well, what happens, in the comic is that the act of trying to catch her and break that terminal velocity is its pure physics. You can't just stop her motion. You can't retard it instantly.
Right. That's what I was hoping
for. You have to slow that.
I think the addition to the ground, although it's a awesome visual sequence the way they did it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the scene. I was really hoping that he would have caught her in midair, and then she just kind of bounced in midair, and you realize, holy shit, he killed her by saving her. You know, that she probably It would have still died if she'd hit the ground, obviously. But instead of his normal swing by catching somebody, you know, he does.
I think that's the point, though, because it makes it more poignant that, you know, she would have hit the ground, but for him at least trying.
Right.
And
right.
What that gives you is that rare thing, especially in a superhero type of thing, where the hero can fail.
Right. Right.
Don't get to see that very often because we're terrified of the hero failing.
Right. What I did love about that scene, though, is that he saved her like two or three times on the way down.
Yeah.
You know, see, every time you think they're going to go with the milquetoast side of it, where
yeah,
he's like, oh, the whole commercials are going to say, oh, the Gwen Stacy death is coming. And then he saves her, and you're like, ah, damn it. Oh, yes. Oh, damn it again. You know,
yeah.
And when
well,
it finally.
The part where they're on the bridge where he does the whole island. Thing and goes and gets her and they're up at the top of the where her death happens in the comic book.
Yeah, exactly.
And everybody's and I'm like, oh, here, and then it does it and I'm like, oh, you son of a bitch.
I was actually waiting for the bait and switch. I was waiting for her to survive, and then when she ultimately didn't, what I think that they did very well there was recognize that most of their a good percentage of that audience were going to be familiar with the story. And how do you tell a story that you know how it's going to end and yet give it that twist? And what you do is you make everybody who knows how it's going to end think you're going to, you know, take the different route.
Right.
And preserve the character. And like, oh, well, yeah, we know she dies in the comics, but this isn't that, you know. And they took you right to the edge. They're like, oh, guess what? We're going to kill her after all. It's what you knew was going to happen, right?
My only disappointment is I mean, I was disappointed that it happened so soon in this new series. Only because, not because, I mean, I love that it happened now because it's, you don't expect it to actually go through with it. But I was disappointed because I want to see more on screen together because that's some of the best stuff of the movie is watching them interact.
Yeah.
They were phenomenal. I thought that it was a much better relationship than the previous movie series. And when,
oh, you mean they had actual chemistry?
Yes.
And Greasy and Snaggletooth don't get along well.
you mean Chiclet Teeth?
One of the things that I was talking to Bobby about when we were miscommunicating over which movies I was whining and swearing off of Spider-Man. One of the reasons was is in the earlier movies when they were when he was doing all this stuff with Mary Jane and tossing her around, it's like, you know, she's not super powered. And, you know, how many during all this being tossed around and stuff, how many vertebrae have you broken at this point?
Yeah, I mean, she was good for she was pretty much guaranteed several months in the hospital, even if she survived.
Yeah,
but you know, they did a good job. And I think though, also it's very much like to go back to the bread and butter for Andrew and I in our show. Going back to like comics, it's sort of like the when Sue Dibney was killed in Identity Crisis, because just by pure chance, I kept seeing a bunch of her appearances in different comics, where I wasn't normally seeking out any stories with either elongated man. And yeah,
that's on you, buddy.
Yeah,
I'm always seeing out stories about elongated man.
You're biggest, your dream comic is Elongated Man meets Mr. Banjo.
Oh, that is a dream come true.
But, you know, the thing about it is, I fell in love with that character, and then, oh, this is, DC's doing this big Identity Crisis thing, that's supposed to be good. And, you know, right off the bat, it's like, you killed Sue Dibney. And I think that they created that beautiful chemistry, and you fell in love with them as a couple. And even though you knew that she's supposed to die in the comics, if you knew already, you kind of were willing to let it go if they went that other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you'd have been a little disappointed, but you still, it would have been okay. And so I think it really did address both the familiar and unfamiliar fan.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Another thing that I enjoyed about the movie as well, is I was kind of afraid they were going to do a Batman Returns thing. It's like, oh boy, we have a second movie. We're gonna put in this villain and that villain and that villain, and everybody's gonna get 15 minutes, and we're gonna develop them all, and it'll be great. And I was like, I don't want to go through the villain checklist. And they didn't do that.
No.
They had the one really good adversary, another's adversary thrown in to mix it up, and then the introduction of somebody at the very end to give you that sense of the story continues, like in the next issue of Spider-Man.
I was a little disappointed at the lack of glitter.
Rhino. I was a little disappointed with that, a whole Rhino thing altogether. That pissed me off.
I thought it was good.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I still enjoyed it because I'm getting Rhino, and you've got Paul Giamatti, who's perfect.
Yeah.
But I'm like,
name of your biography, I'm getting Rhino.
I'm getting Rhino. I thought you were going to say Paul Giamatti is perfect. I'm a huge Rhino fan, both in the Animal Kingdom and in comics. And but not, I'm not a Rhino fan from the standpoint like I know everything about the character and all that crap. I just always love the character. I love seeing him destroy things. I love the suit. I love the way he's drawn. It's one of those kind of characters for me. And
well, yeah, especially in the comics. I love the fact that his suit looks, I mean, it's got like little Rhino eyes on the side.
Yeah,
of his head.
I think he even has a little tail, don't he?
Yeah, I think he did at one time.
Well, but I think it's phenomenal that they made a guy in a rhinoceros suit menacing.
Yeah.
I mean, 10 points for that at least.
That's the guy you expect to see at your door doing a singing telegram.
I didn't find the Rhino at the end as near as entertaining as he was when he was out of the Rhino suit as just Paul Giamatti at the beginning.
Yeah.
Well, I think that was kind of the point.
Right, but I mean, it didn't really do anything for me, like, you know, putting him on all fours and being so bulking and mechanical complete, as opposed to, I would have been okay if they'd given him more of a mech type armor that was more streamlined to like a human shape, but had the big horn and more of a real horn instead of this bulky, like I'm driving a Rhino car. it didn't hurt the film for me, and I love just getting to see him there. Pissed me off that's where the movie ended, but we all know that's basically just said, hey, here comes Sinister Six movie, and that was the whole point for that setup. So I thought it was kind of I was glad they did it on one part from the beginning to the end. I was upset that it didn't really build on it and it give us anything to see how they got him into the suit and what the suit does. And I'm sure all that's going to come in the Sinister Six. And
I was kind of sad he didn't charge the little kid.
That little kid needed to die.
Yes.
He was on my
nerves.
That's a parent issue. That's a discipline problem.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, the mom did want to go and kick his little ass, but the cops were holding her back.
Worst cop ever. That cop was so concerned with stopping the mom.
And you didn't get coverage of mom. Where they're like, you take the little shit.
Well, that'll
learn him.
My first issue was the cop grabs the mom to stop her from going, not, holy shit.
Doesn't
let me go save your child.
Yeah, he doesn't want to do his job and protect the child. Your kid's on his own. I honestly, Chief, I thought that was Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's fine. He's dressed as Spider-Man. But at the same time, I thought that added a great element to the Spider-Man mythos.
Oh, absolutely.
Of him dealing with that kid early in the movie and then showing up there at the end with him, you know, thanks for doing this for me. And it kind of gave him his stance to come back and actually be Spider-Man again, you know, when he decided to step away from it because, you know,
It was nice for Rhino to wait while they had that poignant conversation. It was also
a really good bookend to the conversation that he had with Max Dillon at the beginning.
Yeah. Right.
When he first got his powers. Because, you know, Spider-Man has always been, with great power comes great responsibility. You are a public figure. If you do these things, they can have a backlash. You need to be, you know, careful about what you do and say to people and the way that you act. So he tells him, you know, when he first sees, and I love the way that they have Spider-Man handling situations like that where he's not all brawn. He's going to try to use his wit to get out of a situation, to get, you know, to get the, to protect the public. So, you know, in his interactions with Max, where he's telling Max, you know, hey, you know, when he sweeps him up and gets him off the road and he's trying to identify with everybody, and then later when he gets his powers, and he, you know, and he's trying to get him out of that situation, away from the public, into another place. Like those things, and it starts dawning on him. He's like, "Oh, this motherfucker crazy! Like I shouldn't have said this to that guy." You know,
I wish we'd got a little more development for his character.
Well, we can get into that a little bit when we talk about gripes, because I've got many a gripe about the characterization of Electro.
Well, I'll tell you real quick. Well, no, go ahead. I'm sorry. I'll bring it up in a minute.
I do want to talk about some of the pluses, because I love the fact that going in, I really, you know, had no great desire to see The Amazing Spider-Man, even though I'm a big fan of the Lizard.
As am I.
From, you know, because he's sort of Marvel's Man-Bat. And, I just like animal-themed characters, obviously.
Lizard Man.
Hence your obsession with Squirrel Girl.
Yes, exactly.
Isn't that my obsession with Squirrel Girl?
Yeah, oh, that's right. It is yours. Whoever. I didn't want to steal your thunder. Anyway, the point that I just got suddenly had this
a squirrel ran by.
Squirrel.
He was like, squirrel.
Squirrel.
Squirrel. Squirrel girl. Where's Squirrel girl?
They all went to their happy place.
I have this love-hate relationship with Squirrel girl.
We met to Squirrel girl and we all start fantasizing.
I know.
Oh, my God.
You need to interject.
I'm not going to make the most obvious remark here.
You need to interject some, like, love music. Right there, when the money goes out. It's basically, it says, it's like Squirrel Girl, and it gets quiet. It's like, dee, 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 dee.
Theme from a summer place.
What I wanted to say, though, was on the plus column, there were a lot of things like I really loved when we finally saw Amazing Spider-Man, and this carried over heavily into the sequel. That you got that kind of. That's one of the things people were telling me, is watch this because you get that kind of Spider-Man banter.
Yeah.
They only just barely touched on in Sam Raimi's stuff. And he is so good at delivering these very Spidey lines. Like there at the end with the Rhino, and he's getting bullhorn. He's like saying, you know, on behalf of real Rhino, of New York City and real rhinos everywhere.
Right.
You know, he's like, this guy has a, he's like in a tank and I'm going to like goof off. And be a smart ass. Because,
well, I gotta do it, you know.
That's the thing about it is, what that says about Spidey, and I don't know if anybody's ever addressed this, and this is something like Andrew and I would probably ought to do a whole story arc on, is the psychology of becoming the superhero.
Right.
Yeah. And if you look at all that banter, and this plays very well in the film, perhaps even better because it's, you know, you're actually seeing a human being delivering these lines and you get a lot more feel behind them, is you get the idea this is a huge coping mechanism. Because who the hell is he? He's like this, some kid with, he's got these superpowers and he made himself some web shooters, but does that make it a good idea to stand down the guy in the four-legged tank with the giant machine guns?
That, yeah.
You know, would just blast it up part of the street there?
Apparently the only thing that could stop somebody like that is two people having a conversation.
Is a cop holding him back?
Yeah.
A cop and bad parenting is the only thing that can stop the rhino.
Is either face down the rhino or go just slap that chick.
I'll have to say, one of my things I loved most about the film as a whole, the visuals are amazing. Like, literally, like, seeing him when he swings around and does the poses.
Yeah.
It feels like Spider-Man, you know, that you can tell that they took a lot of time to make sure that when he's jumping and he's shooting the webs and he's posing and he's the way he swings and everything is like right off the page.
They did a lot better job also in conveying the movement of a body through space when like you're from effectively rope to rope.
Well, physics. Yeah. They really did a good job of understanding physics. You don't just... You know, if you shoot somebody with a web, you don't just grab that web and then, ooh, just, you know, snap it like a Slim Jim and the guy goes flying off into the air. There's actual physics behind what you do.
Yeah.
So they did a really good job with that.
And you got to see a lot of that. You know, Peter does a wonderful job in this of, he's literally, this is all on the job training.
Yeah.
In a sense. And you get that kind of baptism by fire that just never stops burning. And in this, because you just have this preponderance of villains, like when he's having to like go on the lizard hunt there and track the lizard down and find out that, you know, he can have the living crap beat out of him.
Right.
And there are things that can destroy him if he's not careful, and that there are things he just simply can't do. But, you know, at the same time, he's learning as he's going, and both of these films, because you can tell they're barreling up on the Sinister Six. You know, they made it painfully obvious. But what they're also doing, which was more subtle, is they're giving you a Spider-Man that is going to be ready for the Sinister Six.
Yeah.
Or at least a Spider-Man who thinks he's going to be ready.
Ooh, yeah.
That's so true.
Well, I think all of it, they were intelligent to, you know, going with what you're saying, is they were intelligent to use the build-up from the first movie and then the death of Gwen Stacy and of the higher level of his fighting with Electro that he had to deal with. And the ending made him the character that we all know now. So we're past the kind of struggle to be Spider-Man, and we're now at Spider-Man. So the real test to that will be how they handle him in the future films, is if they let him now be Spider-Man, or if they're going to keep messing with all the tortured nonsense. You know, not that he won't have any torture, because I'm sure they'll somehow figure out a way for him to have flashes of dealing with the death of Gwen Stacy, which that's fine.
Right, because every hero needs baggage.
Yeah, but, you know, hopefully they'll allow him to be the Spider-Man that he was at the end of that movie and not... Because, you know, notoriously, a lot of these movies, they always like to take him, you know, one step forward and 35 steps back.
Right.
Because you're like, oh, that worked great in that last movie. Let's do this again. You know, so hopefully we won't have that, especially with them doing the Sinister Six movie. Hopefully that'll give them enough of a break to be able to focus on these characters, focus on him and kind of make them all work together.
Well, I've got one quick whine, and then we're going to go into more favorite stuff. How come Gwen, you know, the power goes out all over the city, so that gives pretty much anyone who works for the city a clue as to where the problem might be sourced, you know? And so Gwen and her Honda apparently can make it over to the power plant. Why can't any first responders?
I think because, okay, this is one of those things where, you know, I do Jedi justifications on the JCU every now and again, and I'm constantly challenged to justify things. And one of the things we do on the Hey Kids Comics is, you know, overly think.
Okay, right.
I think what's implicit there is the first responders are busy stopping first looters.
Right.
Because who gets on the scene quicker when the lights go out in New York City than the...
Mexicans. Oh.
Wow.
I was going to say looters and criminal element. But.
Oh, yeah, now suddenly you have a moral compass. We heard the last show.
Well, what about the city employees who are, you know, they're totally union, and if they just get their asses over there, man, that's double time at least.
But
there's no guarantee of that. The city is in a state of chaos, and unless they've got the foreman or somebody from the city itself guaranteeing them, they're probably on the phone because the phones are still working.
Oh.
They're on the phone saying, look, man, I'd get all know that, but, you know, you got to tell me, is it on or is it off? I mean, you know, my time's worth a lot of money this time of night. You know, I got the kids. Okay, yeah, you got me. I don't have any kids, but if I had kids, you know, and there's some of the guys, they got kids. You know, it goes like that. And all this negotiation is going on. Meanwhile, a non-union, non-city worker is going in and rebooting the whole system.
Yeah.
What does that tell us about the... It's an indictment of the New York City power system, is what it was. All this was.
You also got
to
remember.
How do you expect a first responder to get to that scene that actually knows what they're doing? That's my thing. Like, the only reason that Gwen Stacy knew what she was doing was because she works for Oscorp, right? Because she's seen the specs. She knows what's going on. How do you expect to get somebody to that scene that isn't intimately involved in the situation, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
You know,
if movies have taught us anything, it's always the big giant button on the panel that you have to hit.
Right, but it's only the big giant button that you have to hit if you're Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, but you also have to remember there's an electrical being running around the city destroying everything around them. So maybe he happens to be fighting in the neighborhood where all those people are living, and they can't get past
that.
That
guy on the phone, he's like, "Hey, hang on a second, somebody's bringing some lightning or something."
Is this Angelo?
I'm Angelo, man.
Hey, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying, sometime I got children, right? I got mouth. I'm not gonna go out there.
Big Apple, I think.
I got candles. Yeah, I'm Angelo. I got a heart of gold. All
right.
It's
right.
Not
I'm going to break up this pal, weird. Man. I'm your buddy.
I'm going to break up this weird pizza commercial. I have the one thing about the movie, and there is no redeeming quality to the character that really bothered me, was that stupid German Nazi doctor character that's dealing with Electro.
Oh, wow. Well, where'd you have that? He
was so out of place in the film.
Yeah, it was like a human centipede suddenly invaded the Marvel.
Yeah, which if they had gotten, you know, Dieter Laser, I would have been perfectly fine, because at least he's creepy and he plays a part. This guy was like this weird gay Nazi German, you know, just...
He was Hydra. When they found out that Hydra was a big deal, they took...
Yeah, all of a sudden, they probably recast. There was probably just like a guy, you know, I'm your doctor.
Well, in the comics, and I don't know the whole shtick here, but because I don't remember it. But when I believe that the character was essentially that character that they were emulating was a female doctor that had nothing to do at all with Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
But the whole character premise made no sense on any level, because he's got like lipstick on, and he's very dainty, but he's German.
I think what they wanted to do there was give you a mad doctor.
Right.
Not just a mad doctor, but a mad doctor that you wanted to see die.
See, well, I originally thought, I didn't even want to see him die. I just wanted him to leave the room.
That's what made his death so much more fulfilling.
But I thought when they first showed him, before they said who he was, his name or anything, I thought that was going to be Doc Ock. And the way he carried himself, I'm like, okay, could this possibly be Otto Octavius? Because he acted kind of like him, you know, like the direction that character may go. But
like
then it went
Lectory type thing.
Yeah, but then when they said his name, and I'm like, well, screw this. I don't want this guy around.
That's the point where you half expected him to tell Electro. He's hanging there. He's like, it puts the lotion on its
right.
It's the hopes.
Speaking of Electro,
where's my face?
What is it about wanting, if you want to make a guy just really creepy, you just put a bunch of makeup on him.
Right.
But before we get off topic on y'all's weird lotion stories again, they... Before we go all into the what we really, really liked about the film or anything else, like one of the big issues that I had that kind of was going to bring up earlier about Electro is embellishing on that character. There's a sequence, which I thought he was fine in the film. I would have liked to see more direction of really showing him really go off the deep end. And apparently there's a scene filmed where he kills his mother.
Wow.
That made it, that I think they said they took it out because it made it a little too dark. But I think it would have been more...
If it was a Warner film, it would have stayed.
Yeah, I think it would have hit home more for the real, you know, psychotic issues this guy has, as opposed to just being a crazed fan.
Yeah.
You know?
The whole crazed fan was something
was
I really
very,
wanted.
That was very Joel Schumacher-ish.
I want to dig into that a lot, because that really was the thing that chipped away at an otherwise... brilliant piece of work.
Once he became Electro, which I wasn't a fan of the direction, which, you know, the ultimate Electro direction they went, but once I saw him and the voice they used for him and stuff, I was like, that is a cool ass version of that character.
I loved Electro.
Yeah,
I thought that was fantastic.
I did too. I would have loved to see him wear the starfish mask, but I think he came off badass. And that fight between Electro and Spider-Man, where it's all the electricity and it's flying action on Spider-Man. You know, it's like they took what they tried to do in the Ang Lee Hulk film in the sky, and they did it right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you can tell that this, from the storytelling aspect, that they were taking their cues from not only what works, but what doesn't work.
Right.
In films, and avoiding a lot of the things that didn't work. Unfortunately, one of the things that they didn't, that doesn't work, that they embraced wholeheartedly was that, you know, I think that if you had had a chance to put a lot of the things, like if you'd put Gwen Stacy meeting him ahead of him meeting Spider-Man.
Right.
Then, and, you know, it becomes, the way it was presented, it becomes like a very gregarious Mr. Bean, you know, carrying around his birthday card and showing it off to everybody.
Right. I love that part of it because I thought that was so just a bizarre nature to show how weird
he is. But
the thing
is, you could have had the birthday card before he met Spider-Man.
Right.
Because you needed to have established more of what a soft touch he is for him. I mean, he's just constantly casting about for some connection.
Well, just starved
and some
attention.
Recognition.
Yeah.
And I see, I think they lost that because of the addition to the whole Osborn stuff and bringing the Green Goblin in so they could set up the Stacy stuff. They sacrificed what they could have done more with the Jamie Foxx and the Electro and all that part of the story and let it build more, which is, I wish they had done that, then maybe built up a bigger story with the Green Goblin stuff and then get it's the death of Gwen Stacy in one film, you know, as opposed to...
I was impressed with what they were able to pull off with that many storylines. That usually turns into Batman and Robin.
Right. They handled it very cleverly. It streamlined just enough where nothing overshadowed too much of anything else.
Yeah, but I could have done without the, just sort of going from, oh, I'm just, you know, goofy electrician and my life got saved, to I'm going to do a misery thing here, and I'm going to go into collaging, and even if nothing else, if they could have done something that was implicit of that behavior, like have him tear down a collage of somebody else,
the impetus being that he's been crazy and then he's been a stalker of other people. And now he's moved his focus.
Because everything comes so out of the blue.
There was his whole story had so many coincidences that would they were the perfect stepping stones to make him a villain, as opposed to.
But I would have bought more into his obsession with Spider-Man, and ultimately. That sort of Saturday morning cartoon kind of, oh, you betrayed me, and that's why I became evil O sort of mentality. Yeah, then I had there been something I could hang all that on, and there simply wasn't.
Yeah, because they should have had like their that first meeting of him and everything should have been fine, and then it should have showed him seeing him swing a few times, and then really, you know, slowly start building the collage because he starts becoming obsessed with him or something, as opposed to he got saved by him and, oh, he just happens to be obsessed with him already, too.
Right,
you know, all that, they kind of threw it together. And I will say I liked how they managed to put Osborn and him together. I liked the way they angled that.
Yeah.
You know, to use that whole corporate thing. I was so pissed off that I think they squandered the whole... Chris Cooper as Norman Osborn.
He was good.
I don't like the idea of that virus thing.
Yeah.
I
like where they could go with it. Right now I'm not a fan of it, you know, and
yeah, while it was better. We'll find out what it's all about.
Well, Hold on,
before he says that, here's where it had a redeeming value to me, because at first, you know, obviously it was already better than the Power Ranger from the original one, but it... You know, and he's flying around looking like Evil Ed from Fright Night at the end of this one.
Yeah.
But the fact that he looked normal again at the end of the film tells me, okay, he can morph even further into that full-on lizard character, goblin character, and not just be Evil Ed again. He could have the full-on thing.
Exactly. I think it suggested that this was just the first kind of an initial transformation.
Yeah,
that's where.
And they suggested that it could have got worse and gone back and forth as well.
Right, that's where they reeled me back in. Is at first I'm like, okay. He's okay, but I wish they had done it differently. And when they show him at the end, I see him, they reeled me back in, and I'm like, okay, now it's open-ended to do whatever they want with him.
Well, Andy, what did you like about the virus concept?
He just likes people
pretty much what they said, so they got it.
That's how you do a backhanded compliment, Andy. When you tell them, and then you talk about the redeeming not. I didn't want to like it, but
you made some really good points, Bobby. You made some really good points.
I didn't want to like Bobby's opinion, and I was surprised that I did.
That's a backhanded compliment. See, yeah. Andy, that's how you do it.
This is how it's done.
Well, Andy, what did you like the most about it? What was the most pleasant surprise of the whole thing?
Oh, the most pleasant surprise of the whole thing. Honestly, the dance that they did to avoid saying that his parents were S.H.I.E.L.D., but still managed to make them important to the story.
Nice.
That to me was pretty important. That was the above, you know, outside of the things I've already talked about, which you know, was the fact that Bobby liked the way that the virus was done, and and the, you know, the fact that they actually killed Gwen Stacy. Outside of those things, I really liked the parent dynamic of it, because what you didn't get a lot in the comics, and what you certainly didn't get in the Sam Raimi movies, was, and I remember, I think it was issue, and somebody's gonna have to back me up on this, it was back when they were doing the -1 issues in the 90s. It was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that Marvel was doing. They had the Spider-Man -1 issue, but it wasn't a book about Spider-Man. It was a book about Spider-Man's parents working for S.H.I.E.L.D. and the important work that they had done infiltrating, they had infiltrated at that point, Norman Osborn's organization, and we're finding out all the dirty dealings that he was doing with other people, and we're trying to get that back to S.H.I.E.L.D. And it was like a type situation that they were dealing with, and they managed to work that in some small way into the movie and make it important, make his parents important. And the fact that the conversations that he had with Aunt May, again, brilliantly portrayed by Sally Field. Is there anything that woman cannot
I know.
She can't play Gidget anymore.
Right.
She could play like
she
Gidget
was phenomenal.
As the mom of the new Gidget.
She was
but when
phenomenal.
When he was talking to her about his obsession with figuring out who his parents are, very, very poignant scene where he was trying to explain to her that it's not anything you've done. I don't want them back in my life. I just have to know, you know, what happened to them. I thought that whole dynamic with the parents was very well done in this. So
that reminded me of the other thing that kind of irritated me. I did not like the fact that they came back and tried to play the spider virus thing, whatever you want to call it, that it could only work with their DNA, and now we have the convenient connection to Peter being Spider-Man now, that they didn't...
Yeah, that was a bit of a...
You know, they did it without doing it, but it was enough to say, you know, because they did it without saying, well, we didn't plan for him to be Spider-Man, so that was just an accident, you know, mentality, but that's why it works for you and it doesn't work for somebody else. But at the same time, they blatantly did it, and it kind of aggravated me because that was kind of a cop-out direction.
Well, they had to metachlorian it up a little bit.
That's
somewhere
true. And they also had to find a conflict where, you know, Peter would be like, yeah, what's a few drops of blood? And then, yeah. Oh, yeah, better not, because it's just for me, apparently. Somehow.
And what is it with Oscorp with all the spiders, and they have eels in the basement?
Yeah,
this is more of a zoo than it is a like. Kind of a...
But not to be a smartass about the whole virus thing, or about the whole congenital birth defect. Essentially, is what it is. No. You know, it's a genetic disorder. Not to be an asshole. You know, I gave Bobby a hard time. I'm glad I did it. No regrets.
Here's the backhanded comment. Watch this. Go ahead.
No, here's what I do really like about that is. They needed to give Norman and Harry reasons to be crazy without them, because they're very intelligent.
Yeah.
Right? They're driven by, they should be driven by money.
Yeah.
Right? But they're but captains this, of industry.
This
they should
give them desperation and fear.
Well, I think Dane DeHaan is crazy in real life, because that guy is just way too good at being crazy.
Right? He's the Joffrey of,
he was awesome as crazy in Chronicle, and now this. I think he was an awesome Harry Osborn, even though he didn't get a whole lot to do.
Well, but that's the thing. How do you give him a reason to want this so badly? How do you tip him? Here's how you tip him.
I want everybody's opinion real fast. As before Catherine starts making us sign off,
did I'm everybody? Not
gonna be... I use you as the mother of the group. So are we all in agreement that Felicia?
Oh yeah, that was a bit of a name drop. I think
there were a bunch of name drops. There was Smythe. There was the Spider Slayer was in there. Yeah, Spider was in there.
But the whole Felicia thing, you know, they never really fully went all in, you know, but you know, because when you go and look it up online, you know, they've done everything they can to try to claim that that's not that character, even though it's gotta be. You know,
I'm gonna chime in and say there was that they always put a little something in there in each movie that just kind of pisses me off, and the one thing that they did in this movie is you know,
he didn't have his shirt off.
We got rid of our gas lawnmower because it goes over the winter, and when spring comes, you can't start it to save your life. Okay, how can this happen? And still, you can put a quarter in a machine down in the catacombs under the city, and up pops
nearly 20 years later, no less.
Yeah,
I'll just go out on a limb and say because it was probably some kind of a fancy technology base and not actually the machine it appeared to be.
Yeah,
that's true.
And the TRS-80 boots itself up.
I do want to point out, however, Kathy, that you have a problem with that, but you had no problem with, you know, 35-year-old Arnim Zola rebooting on demand.
He's got a point there.
That is awesome.
Yeah, you can't go splitting those hairs hot on the heels of something.
No, my theory is this. I'll justify that for you.
I gotta hear this.
I think people go in and reference Arnim Zola from time to time because he's handy for like lotto numbers and all sorts of
but they've
wide
got the,
variety
they've
of stuff.
The one on he's like on a data stick. They just plug him in. I mean, they've consolidated him down. It's like tech that you can get in Japan today.
They'd been down there recently and they'd updated him. They'd updated him to lipsticks. So that's why he booted up so fast, is they went down there and of course half the crap doesn't work. So they go in, they fix it, they clean it up, they update him to lipsticks and then they leave. And so yeah, of course he's gonna boot right up when they come down.
That you're passionately arguing about the justification of that.
But that train car was damn stupid.
Putting a quarter and making a machine with technology work is ridiculous.
That's
A-okay in my book. This is the Hulk's pants argument all over again.
At the end of the day, it's Hulk pants.
At the end of the day, Reed Richards' unstable molecules made the thing work. Let's just.
Oh, Lord. Well, in the third one, they have to. We got to see more J. Jonah Jameson.
Any J. Jonah Jameson.
I think they've been afraid to touch that because of the dynamic performance.
Oh God! If they could get the same actor, that would rock.
J.K. Simmons. I think I read an article that somebody asked him, and he said that he would love to come back and play the character again.
Because he is the character. He is him.
Yeah, I think they would be foolish.
I'd have no problem with that.
Yeah, have you seen the new stuff that now people are slapping red hair on Emma Stone and saying bring her back as Gwen Stacy?
Yeah, it's like no fair.
As Mary Jane, I wouldn't have a problem. I wouldn't have a problem with that either. I could buy Andrew.
I'm sorry.
Mary Jane.
Yeah, It's just, no,
that's the thing about this movie. Okay, you want to know my favorite thing about this movie is?
Okay.
I give zero shits about what they do in these movies. I'm going to go watch them because they're fun. I have no dog in that fight.
I love the character as visually and to watch him do a superhero shit, but I don't care about the Spider-Man universe and the mythos, so I don't care what their costumes are like if you change it. You know, yeah, when you use Mysterio, I want to see him in a big dome fishbowl. But there's a high chance we ain't going to get that. So I'll get over it and move on. You know, the one character in the Spider-Man universe I wanted to get, I didn't get it the way I wanted. I got that fucking robo-rhino tank but it was cool to watch. It just wasn't what I wanted. But you know what? I still dug it. I got over it.
So my question is this, okay? You've got the nod. And here comes the big secret spoiler alert. You've got the nod to the Vulture. You've got the nod to Doc Ock. You've got the nod to the Rhino.
Uh-huh.
You've got the nod to Green Goblin.
Okay.
Right? Who are the other two have to be Mysterio and Chameleon, maybe? Who are the other two?
Well, technically they still have Lizard in the prison.
That's true. That's true.
I think they should bring in Kraven the Hunter.
Yeah.
Because he would be an easy character to bring in.
Right.
Yeah, because you can introduce him early in the film as an innocuous character that people who are in the know get.
Right.
He's a mercenary essentially that would hunt. So it would be very easy to go to Craigslist and say, "Oh, look, Kraven the Hunter, we need a sixth."
when you get into the man with the hat, which I always forget that character's name, but
you're thinking of the man in the yellow hat. That was from
Curious George. No, the guy that's bringing the Sinister Six together that they brought into the thing. The character from the comic. Yeah,
I want to know how he carried that rhino armor out of there.
Well, supposedly, and y'all could tell me this, but he's supposed to be the same character that put the Sinister Six together in the comic.
Okay.
Which I just read this article recently about who that character is, and I don't remember.
I think George just called him the man in the hat.
Right, but I'm saying there's an actual name to that.
I mean the little monkey called George. That was,
yes, so that is true.
The monkey had a big part in the Sinister Six.
Yes, Curious George just rocked that shit.
No, that was his brother, Furious George.
Furious George, but
wasn't it my Curious George?
Yeah, that's right.
That was he appeared in the Elongated Man, Mr. Banjo's Scroll Freeway film. My favorite part of the entire film is the barbed wire tattoo on Paul Giamatti's head.
Yeah. I've seen still photos of him, and I thought, because they were all from a distance, I thought it was like dotted line across his forehead. I thought,
he just escaped from brain surgery?
Exactly. That was my thought. He had escaped from brain surgery.
Or not.
Well, you know what is funny is that he was the most impressive as far as a casting choice to me, because I mean I love everything Paul Giamatti does, but when they announced him as Rhino, I'm like, are you shitting me? You know, I would want to see Paul Giamatti playing Spider-Man. I'd be perfectly happy with that, but it wouldn't work.
Saw him earlier in the film and they came back to him.
Yeah. And I, again, like I said earlier, I want more of that because I'm just a huge Paul Giamatti fan. But I did like that was the bookend of the film. That was the introduction to Spider-Man in this film, and that was the introduction to Spider-Man as a whole. You know, as well as the introduction to the Sinister Six and a lot of other variables there. I didn't really like that they ended that with that cliffhanger aspect. It works. Just pissed me off.
Well, it's a comic book. What are you gonna do?
It's not. It's a movie, and they.
It wasn't but it wasn't a cliffhanger. It was the end of Rocky II.
There you go. Yeah, or you just stop mid swing.
You know what's happening. You know what happens. You know what happens.
I didn't like that shit either.
Well,
I wanted to see the damn fight. Either I want to see somebody lose. There's always gonna be a winner.
I wasn't familiar enough with Rocky II, but I get what you're saying there. But the thing about it is, this is something I've wanted.
What?
I have actually seen the end of Rocky II. I just haven't seen the beginning of it.
I just love that you pointed out. I'm not as familiar with Rocky II, but I know.
That was my underhanded compliment. Shut up. Okay. At any rate, what I loved about that was for the first time, someone did something in a superhero film that has not been done and is sorely been needed, and that is either the begin or end of film with a fight that you don't get to see the whole thing.
Right.
I'm so damn tired of the fact that they think you have to see every single fight from the very beginning to the very end.
You're going to be,
and in no other genre do you necessarily have to see that.
You're going
to
be with a certain movie I just recently watched. Then
shut up.
Well, they
hate you for seeing it already.
They did that. Remember we discussed it. They did it in the middle of Captain America, so maybe they're finally catching on.
Yeah.
That we don't need necessarily. They did it when they got Falcon's wings, and they did it at the end of this.
They're starting to learn that you can employ the techniques you're using in other films. Superhero films.
Well, I mean, I think it's the fact that now that they're a respected medium genre film, they're now more comfortable doing whatever they want. I mean, as opposed to we have to do a comic book movie. They make a movie that just happens to be comic book based.
Right.
And
right.
Because as soon as you started getting people like Robert Redford and Glenn Close and people like that want to be in comic book movies. Then the medium's changed.
Yeah.
As opposed to, Barry Bostwick or somebody like that.
The movie had a major part played by Sally Field. That's pretty impressive, right? I mean, that's...
But you can't not love Sally Field. Sally Field is just lovable.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. But, you're not half expecting Sally Field to say, yeah, Spider-Man, I'll do that.
Right, and I think that like you said, with Redford, with Field, with Anthony Hopkins in the Thor movies, with not to mention your Ian McClellans and your Patrick
exactly.
Stewart.
It's like Frankie Lane singing about the manhandler for Campbell's Soup. I mean, God's truth, the story was that they were when that ant campaign back in the 70s. If you're old people like Kevin. Now you'll know what I'm talking about. How do you handle a hungry man, the man handler? But the ad agency was like, well, we want to do this. They came up with the song. It's like, if we get some, we need to get a singer in a kind of Frankie Lane kind of timbre and, that kind of sound. They said, well, why not just ask him?
Right. What's wrong with asking him to do it?
And they did, and he did. That was like, part of his catalog now, I guess.
It's part of the new Lost Cuts album.
Deep tracks is what we call that. That's deep tracks.
Okay, campers, we're gonna wrap up. You're gonna say your last favorite.
Okay,
stuff.
I gotta say my piece now. Huh?
Say your piece and give your stars, or in this case, we're gonna make it
webs.
How many webs from 1 to 5? And would you recommend it? Take her away, Cole.
All right,
we're all thinking.
There's one thing I want to bring up, that the death of Gwen Stacy was brilliantly portrayed, and it also, in my eyes, redeemed the franchise.
Yeah.
Because what it did was to make up for the death of Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
Which was just sort of hackneyed and tacked on. It was like, you may as well just left it out. You may as well have had Peter trip over his corpse on the street or something for all the good that did. It was the least poignant death of Uncle Ben ever.
Yeah.
I love the fact that there have been multiple Uncle Ben deaths to reference.
That's true, but still, I mean, it just, that to me, it was like, okay, now I can forgive you for how badly blocked and everything that was.
Well, how many webs would you give it?
I think, though, I may have been one other point, but it probably doesn't matter too much. The most part, I really enjoyed it. It took what I enjoyed. Oh, the other thing I wanted to point out was that Andrew Garfield, I'm not 100% certain, but it seemed like he was a little bit more New York.
Yeah.
Than he was in the previous one. It's like, oh, yeah, Peter grew up in New York. Maybe you should sound like that instead of sounding nondescript.
I think he needs to come back with his English accent the next time.
Yep.
So, it just sounded like he was trying to be more Angelo in this one.
We ain't got time for that. Don't go into that again.
But not to go into that, I would say...
Hey, so always stop for Angelo.
I would, because of the extra Angelo element, I would give it five webs. You know,
five webs. Good.
I got to say five webs. The Spider-Man. New York loves its Spidey.
You could do worse. Yeah.
It's a lot worse. That'll show you something worse.
Andy, what you say? What'd you say now?
Here's the thing I really like about this movie. They used the first one was the origin story of Spider-Man, which again, they finally figured out that we don't really need an actual origin story that's going to take 2 hours.
Right. You just need to hurry up and kill Ben and get over that bump and get going.
Get over the hill and then move on.
That bump was him tripping over the corpse.
That's right. So you get past that point, you have your movie. This movie was the one where they realized that you can... This movie and the Avengers, that you can start building a larger universe based on Spider-Man, because how many years of continuity do you have at your disposal? If done smartly and incorrectly, you can actually do what the audience wants you to do. You don't have to shoehorn a comic book movie and that the audience really doesn't want to see in order to have Spider-Man in a movie. You can actually do a movie that the audience wants to see and start building that universe. You know, they're finally learning that, and thank God for that. So I'm really looking forward to the third one now to see what they can do with it, because they've gotten better every single time.
Cool.
I'm gonna give it 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5, okay. That's good. That's good. Well, Bobby, what do you think?
Well, you know, it's funny. As I ponder here, I'm going to start with – I'm going to give it 4 webbed toes out of 5 because that's more practical than shooting webs, because that's ridiculous.
Okay.
But I enjoyed it as a whole.
Webbed toes are a good idea.
Exactly.
It's
I'm really digging the Amazing Spider-Man franchise, obviously way more than the last one. And it feels you've got the darker, grittier tone, but it still feels like a comic book movie. And the visual – I mean, it feels like anything has jumped off the page and become Spider-Man, despite some of the changes with, you know, the villain, the way they're going with him. But my biggest concern is how well it's going to go without the dynamic of Gwen and Peter together in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that they keep some smart writing, because you know they're going to introduce Mary Jane. If they're smart, I think they'll introduce Mary Jane in a couple of quick sequences in the next film,
mm-hmm.
and then make it the fourth one before they actually start becoming a real item.
But
we know that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I was glad they cut that piece out of this one where they originally filmed Mary Jane. You know, it was like a 1 minute scene of them talking and meeting, and they cut it out. You know, because I think it was things down. But anyway, with my biggest issue with a lot of this stuff was the, you know, some of the Electro lack of the character building that I would have liked for, and some of the coincidence stuff, but it's all stuff you can let go. As a whole, I really dug it.
Cool. I'm gonna give it. I'll give it 4 out of 5 stars because it was really a whole lot better than I thought it was going to be. I will be the first to admit that I am not a Peter Parker Spider-Man fan. I don't read the comics.
That's obvious.
I think an angst-ridden teenager with problems just isn't the character that I relate to. So I don't, that's why I don't read that. But I really enjoyed the movies and the characters, and so as a Spider-Man movie, I would give it 4 webs. Just because I found it fun.
I do have one other thing. I thought this was probably the lamest and worst Stan Lee cameo to date.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's true.
It was very weak. I was very disappointed in it.
Especially the dialogue. There was really no need.
Yeah, well, especially from this franchise, because last one was so awesome.
The Captain America one was funny.
Yeah, but his one in the library has been my favorite to date, with them just kicking the shit out of each other.
That was thrilling.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's just dancing, old man dancing with the headphones, and I'm like, that was so awesome. And then to just have him sit there and make some stupid reference.
He could have just been like holding a window open. Or...
Well, he's like 512 now, or how old is he? Or
Well, yeah, he's like 92 or 90, whatever.
He's got Benjamin Button's disease, come on.
But yeah, it's that his cameo this time actually felt like a cheap forced cameo, whereas other ones, they work him into the story just for kind of shits and giggles. This one felt like, well, shit, we got to put him somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, and you wonder what circumstances they're operating under, because he's seriously, he's getting up there in age, and he's one of, he's like the a national treasure, so you don't want to push him too hard. You don't even make him do more than one take or anything like that. I mean, I hope his health is wonderful, and I hope he is with us for a long time, but man, I would be nervous, you know, trying to get him on set and do anything.
Yeah, I guess they were really risking him breaking his hip dancing around like that in the first one.
So yeah, they said just
they gave him a nice soft.
He's like, look, I'm fresh off Captain America, and I had to walk through that damn museum. Can I sit down?
Sit down for a while.
I realize I shot that and shot those that scene a week ago, and I'm worn out.
Well, anyway, thank you, fellas, for making it a wonderful, wonderful show. For what you think again? Thank you, Andy, and thank you, Cole, from Hey Kids Comics. I catch them on the JCU, and Bobby, what are you up to these days?
The same old crap that Cole forces upon me day in and day out.
I've been cracking the whip because I sent him. You can tell him what I've been forcing you into, press gang you into.
Well, of course, Eddie would be very upset if I did not make sure to tell everybody we have our your first year here, You Are Here Volume 1, that is available not only through, I believe you can probably order it through Jedi Cole, you can also order it through me, but you can also go to Urban Legends Comics in Mesquite and buy it right off the rack, as well as other artwork that I have.
Very nice.
But also, Cole likes to... most of the time, he sends me over some his doodles and his comics, and they go in a pile, and I kind of pick and shuffle through the ones. Every so often, one shows up and says, "I need this one right damn now. It's time for you know."
Yeah, I'll come up with one that's just so topical.
Yeah, it's topical. We gotta have it now before the time runs out. It's like J. Jonah Jameson. So I envision what he says. He's got this cigar, and he's like, "Yeah, kid, this
I've
is gonna come out now. I need
newspaper, and I'm banging the desk and trying to type."
They're employing old Hollywood, but
yeah, that's what I envision. He's like, I need this now, okay? Yeah. So and of course, what do? I get it done and I send it to him immediately because I feel threatened. So
right, scary.
But anyway, we've got the You Are Here cartoons written by the brilliant Mr. Cole and Chicken Scratch by myself.
Aww.
And
that's my crappy sketches and turns them.
Well, Bobby is also a phenomenal movie reviewer, a proper professional movie reviewer.
I don't know if it's phenomenal, but I am paid to do it.
There you go.
And yeah, it's phenomenal.
Where can people check out your reviews?
Go to theexaminer.com and just look up my name, Bobby Blakey, and you can find my covers for TV, movies, martial arts, and comics, and anything else that you may need that might not relate to me as well.
Awesome.
My last comic is still up and available. I haven't updated in quite a while, but I've been writing some new cartoon strips, so hopefully that will be coming up soon.
Excellent.
All this time later, over a year later, being forced to do my stuff, it's inspired you.
Not really. it actually makes it harder for me to do my comic because I'm like, shit, why can't I just wait for him to do all the work of writing it and sketching it out, and I can just copy his drawings and then...
we do all your layouts for you.
Yeah, I'm going to start sending you the scripts for Last Stop. You can lay them out for me.
That's
and
right,
save me a lot.
There you go.
Be funny.
That's right. Make this work, monkey.
You know, that would be good, but then the problem is I would probably start then writing female characters into the scripts, and then that would ruin it for me.
That's fine, because they're all aliens.
So oh, that's true. You can make them look like whatever you want. You don't have to worry about the fact that they're mannish.
I'll have you know I did turn in three cartoons as of late with female characters, given one of them was a Lego female, but the other two were somewhat people females, and they came out
fairly. They were people hand females.
They were people hand females.
Well, Andy, what do we have to look forward to on Hey Kids Comics?
Actually, what we're going to start doing, starting I believe this week, is revisiting our first ever story arc with new guests. Going to go back and revisit the shit that we said that we feel we were wrong about, or stuff that we were right about, and
nice.
And reevaluate how we've changed in the past 89, 90 issues of Hey Kids Comics.
DC does that shit all the time.
Right. Well, we're not hitting the reset button. There's no flash. I'm not coming back as an empowered woman, and Cole is not coming back as a talking monkey yet.
Well, now I'm not listening.
Right.
If I just come back as a talking monkey, I will investigate the guy in the hat from Spider-Man.
But I will be showing up at Mr. Banjo.
Listen, I'm not coming back as an empowered woman because, bitch, I already am an empowered woman.
y'all laugh at his joke. I have video of him dancing at AllCon, and he's not lying.
Woman. I am a strong black woman. I don't like it when you guys discount that, so just keep it in mind. So that's what we're doing. It's going to be really cool and really fun, and we got some surprises in store there as well. So
nice. And that's on the Jedi Call Universe at Hey Kids Comics?
Yeah, so you can search for Hey Kids Comics
on the JC site. There's a, if you scroll down, there's a whole alphabetical listing of all the different categories, and I pretty much just flag any given thing with category.
That's right.
But there is nothing there for Gen 13. I apologize, Rick.
Yeah, we just don't have that category.
There might be. Let's not rule that out. That's...
Well, Cole, what you been up to the past couple days?
Well, what haven't I been? I've been running herd on the JCU. In addition to Hey Kids Comics, we of course have the Rantcore Pit and the Rantcore Pit Live over at Deep Ellum on Air. But we also have the archive at the Jedi Cole Universe. Naturally, we have What'd You Think? And a number of other podcasts. We've got a couple of new projects in the works. And also, I want to plug something that isn't on the JCU, but it is too cool to not let, you know, to go by the wayside. That's Blasters and Buns, which is an Andy Farmer production.
I'm involved.
He's very much involved, and I'm involved. You should go check that out as well.
You can find me on Facebook, and there'll be links there.
Nice. Well, Bobby and I, our next show for What'd You Think, I do believe, is going to be Godzilla.
It will be a special edition, giant-sized What'd You
That's
Think?
That's right.
That will not only be covering the all-new Godzilla, but also the original Japanese cut of the 1954 Godzilla that was recently screened at the Angelica.
It was awesome. So go see that now, and so you will be ready for the next What'd You Think? Thanks, guys.
Booyah.
Did you say booyah?
I did. I did.